Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading text 14 from Canto 5, Chapter 13.
Tam stan vipanan sahita tratatra. Vihaya jatam pari grihya sartaha. Avartate dhyapi nakashchid atra. Viradavanak param upaiti yogam. Tam stan vipanan sahitatra tatra. Vihaya jatam parigrihya sartaha. Avartate dhyapi nakashtiratra. Viradavanak param upaiti yogam. Tan, tan.
All of them.
Vipanan.
Embarrassed in various ways.
Saha.
The living being.
He.
Certainly.
Tatra tatra.
Here and there.
Vihaya.
Giving up.
Jatam.
Those who are newly born.
Parigrihya.
Taking.
Sa-artaha.
The living being searching for his own interest.
Avartate.
Wanders in the forest.
Adya-api.
Even until now.
Na.
Not.
Kashchit.
Any of them.
Atra.
Here in the forest.
Vira.
Oh, hero.
Adavanaha.
Of the path of material life.
Param.
The ultimate end.
Upaiti.
Gets.
Yogam.
The process of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. My dear King, on the forest path of material life, first a person is bereft of his father and mother, and after their death, he becomes attached to his newly born children. In this way, he wanders on the path of material progress and is eventually embarrassed. Nonetheless, no one knows how to get out of this, even up to the moment of death. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this material world, family life is an institution of sex. Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukham. Bhagavatam 7:9:45. Through sex, the father and mother beget children, and the children get married and go down the same path of sexual life. After the death of the father and mother, the children get married and beget their own children. Thus, generation after generation, these things go on in the same way, without anyone's attaining liberation from the embarrassment of material life. No one accepts the spiritual processes of knowledge and renunciation, which end in bhakti yoga. Actually, human life is meant for jnana and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation. Through these, one can attain the platform of devotional service. Unfortunately, people in this age avoid the association of liberated people, sadhu sangha, and continue in their stereotyped way of family life. Thus, they are embarrassed by the exchange of money and sex. Tams tan vipanan sahi tatra tatra vihaya jatam parigrihya sartaha avartate dhyapi na kashchiratra viradhavana param upaiti yogam. My dear king, on the forest path of material life, first, a person is bereft of his father and mother, and after their death, he becomes attached to his newly born children. In this way, he wanders on the path of material progress and is eventually embarrassed. Nonetheless, no one knows how to get out of this even up to the moment of death. So, Rahugana's conversation with Jed Barrett was, as they say, an eye-opener. Several thoughts to share in this verse. We'll go first to the purport and how Prabhupada is treating this in the purport. In addition to repeating the particulars of the message, and he's also connecting the previous verse that was related to money and family, is this verse, attachment for money and attachment for family. Attachments to objects that are supposed to bring happiness, and by attachment to objects that are temporary, they bring distress. They don't bring happiness. The sense of attachment is it's a perverted reflection of spiritual attachment. So there's some sense of something, a buzz, some sense of happiness. But it ends in distress. The previous, and that's how Prabhupada ends the purport. Thus they are embarrassed by the exchange of money and men. Money and sex. So, but in this world, people are pursuing both things. Pretty much universally. And it's in the verse, this word, vipanam, embarrassed. The whole circumstance of material life, besides its, has its built-in miseries, especially from the platform of considering the soul, it's embarrassing. That which is eternal to chase after the temporary and then get slapped in the face. It's embarrassing. It's miserable, but it's so far from the proper position of the soul. And it's a nice contrast. Jed Barrett is perfectly situated in the position of the soul, although within a material body. And the king is a perfect example of an embarrassed fool who is very attached to the body and the bodily conception and the pride and everything that goes with bodily conception. So, doesn't say this explicitly, but Judd Barrett, at least we don't hear of Judd Barrett speaking to others. He just tolerated all kinds of madness going on with indifference until he came across the king, and then he suddenly started speaking when before he was silent. It seems to me that the prompt is, here's a suitable person. Judd Barrett's brothers and the rogues who wanted to sacrifice him to the goddess Kali and so many other people weren't qualified to hear transcendental knowledge. And at least in this case, Judd Barrett chose Maharaj Rahugana. And just from hearing him the first time around, he got it right away. And then he wanted to hear more and hear more and hear more. And so he's getting a full anatomy of materialistic life. And it's an embarrassment for the soul. Just having the mere fact that we have a body, it's a Prabhupada called it a flag. It's a statement that I'm envious of Krishna. Whoops, that's embarrassing. Because, you know, we're trying to become devotees and develop devotion for Krishna. And I'm waving the flag that says, I'm envious of Krishna. It's embarrassing. And then it's a long list of other embarrassments. That he's giving many. And the list is practically endless. The emphasis is going to the sense of attachment without understanding the consequence of attachment, material attachment. And material attachment is there because the spiritual attachment has been slackened at least, or broken. And by slackening attachment to the Supreme, by default, the material attachment comes. Two ways that Prabhupada said this very nicely. When you're looking towards the sun, you see no shadow, you only see light. And you turn your back to the sun and you only see shadow, you don't see light. So this material condition is the shadow, where the absence of Krishna is there, and one sees the shadow and accepts the shadow as reality and tries to enjoy the shadow, material existence. And the remedy is turning one's attention again. But the point of the purport is they don't know. And even they may have some idea of turn to God. The implication of the living entity in adversity to God and utilizing the senses for sense gratification in the name of godliness or something, they're not understanding the point. It's certainly better. Certainly better. The mode of goodness is better than ignorance and passion. And perhaps in course of time, by following something that's mode of goodness, sense enjoyment, then at least the possibility is there, a greater possibility is there, that when they contact someone who is carrying true bhakti for the personality of Godhead, they can ignite. They can capture that message. But attachment keeps one blinded. And Nate Vidu Svartakatimi Vishnu Dorashaye, Prahlad Maharaj describes it. Even they're told for the most part. They can't get it. They don't want it. That which is going to enhance the shadow happiness is what they want. And so God that enhances shadow happiness, yes. And where it's knowledge of jnana and vairagya, knowledge of our position as the eternal servant and everything is meant for him and how to use the senses exclusively in service to him, it's I'll go to another place. Go to another well to get my water. So to become situated in devotional service is very rare. Manusha nam sahasreshu kashchid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kashchid veti mam tatvata. Very rare. Very rare. In reading the verse, I thought of the two verses from previous part, very nice section of the Bhagavatam, 5.5, Rishabhdev's instructions to his sons, and two consecutive verses. The first one being when there is fruitive intention, I want to enjoy objects of the senses, and seeing family and money, or Prabhupada is being really explicit, seeing sex and money as enjoyment, just seeing it as enjoyment, it colors the mind. And when the mind is colored, nothing is clear. And one does foolish things, not just those things. One's life is rendered foolish. The verse is Parabhavastavat Abodha Jato Yavan Na Jigyasata Atmatattvam. Na Jigyasata Atmatattvam. Not inquiring about Atmatattva, the reality of who I am in my eternal identity. Minus that, Parabhavastavat, Parabhava. Defeat, misery, in two words. Abodha jato. So buddhi and abuddhi. Abodha jato, born from ignorance. So when one is influenced by the bodily conception of life, to inquire about the spiritual conception of life, you know, genuinely, sincerely, factually, besides, like, how can I do things piously to be a pious enjoyer, kind of, but, you know, inquiring about the spiritual identity, influenced by ignorance, one doesn't ask that question. Parabhavastavat abodha jato yavan na jigyasata atmatattvam. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activities, he has to accept another body. I mean, more of the same, more of the same, more of the same, just repetition, more of the same. It's embarrassing. It's lamentable. It's very sad. But it's as Prabhupada would say, this is going on endlessly. And it's not just, you know, a sprinkling of a few living entities. Countless numbers of conditioned souls are caught in this unfortunate, embarrassing situation. And the next verse is even more matching what this, what our 13th chapter verse says. When the living entity is covered by the mode of ignorance, he does not understand the individual living being and the supreme living being, and his mind is subjugated to fruitive activity. Therefore, until one has love for Lord Vasudev, who is none other than myself, he is certainly not delivered from having to accept a material body again and again. And the lessons of life one doesn't learn. They're provided, and one doesn't learn. One learns there's birth and death, and one celebrates birth and laments death. And on it goes. It's sad. Especially, again, this point of vipanam, it's embarrassing for the soul. We have nothing to do with any of this. And the force of material nature is so strong, the force of the mode of ignorance, impelling material activities and passion, impelling fruitive activity, is so strong. Bodily identification and fruitive activity, so strong. They just do it again. Puna charvata charvananam. Again and again, chewing the chewed. Again and again. It's very sad. The good news is there are, at least when there is the opportunity for such persons as Judd Bharat, or as Prabhupada is pointing in the verse Sadhu Sangha, or as Kapila Dev expresses to Devahuti, Sadhu Sangha, the best of all situations, the most fortunate of all things, is to have the association of saintly persons. When Devahuti inquires from Lord Kapila, you're with me now, but I know in time you're going to leave. And my husband is gone, you're going to leave. What will be my protection? And he right away, association with devotees. Sadhu Sangha. When Krishna was leaving, he instructed Uddhava before he left, after I leave, it's going to become very bad. Kali Yuga will begin, and I want you to be protected and safe. So go take the association of devotees of Naranarayana. He was already the resident of Dwarka, their devotees. But specifically, Krishna had some appreciation of the devotees of Naranarayan in their strictness and their austerity. Stay in the association of devotees, and after I'm gone, you'll be all right. You'll be safe. There's protection. There's protection with the senses are controlled, and one is in the association of those whose senses are controlled. And the strength of that is devotion to the personality of Godhead. There's protection in that. And without that wholesome association, the force of the material energy is very, very strong. Very strong. One can, like the example of the bundle of sticks together, and the stick that's taken out of the bundle is easily broken. There are austerities, to be sure, in living as we live in a temple, in an ashram with close association, brahmacharis in the ashram, grihasthas nearby. There are austerities in that way of life. The other one is much greater austerity, living apart from the association of devotees. Better this one. And in our contribution to that association, be a good example, or be render the service of helping to remind others of Krishna by both our achar and our prachar. Here, Jad Bharat is doing that with Rahugana. And that's the greatest act of kindness. I remember discussing this some time ago about being another's friend. I forget what was the context of the Bhagavatam. But the characteristic of... yes, I remember. The characteristic of a devotee is they want to be attached to the personality of Godhead, they want the association of devotees, and they want friendly relations with all living beings. And that friendly relations with all living beings is to remind them of Krishna, to bring Krishna into their life. The attached person has their family and small circle of friends. And a devotee has everyone. Is it the sense of community or of appreciation or affinity broadens when the bodily conception is removed and all that goes with it. And the conception of association and concern for well-being of others expands. It's just natural. We shouldn't be artificial about it. And imagine something. But it just happens naturally. The concern for the well-being of, beyond our small circle of friends is just a natural part of the consciousness of one who has become, by good association and good practice, connected to Krishna. It just happens. Certainly, when we think of our founder Acharya, in addition to carrying out the instruction of his spiritual master, it's very, very clear that powerful driving force was his concern, his compassion for those who he didn't even know, like in a personal relationship, but great personal sacrifice to relieve them of their suffering condition, like us. Powerful compassion. He could have easily just stayed in Vrindavan and gone deeper into the mellows of devotion and intimacy in his relationship with Krishna and so forth and so on, and just done that without taking on the disturbance of risking his life and crazy people and everything, and get involved in the lives of people who were so entangled in madness. Been much easier just stay in Vrindavan and do that. But he left that to on the order of a spiritual master and this very powerful quality of compassion. that we're finding in John Bharat. What he was carrying, when Rahugana heard him, he was taken aback. Said, I thought you were a crazy fellow. But the way that you're speaking, it's very clear. You're on the topmost platform of realization. You know, who are you? How did you get to this position? And please describe further. So he discloses what he understands about his situation, who he was, how he came to be what he is, and small point, but we should be, while being compassionate and following the example of our founder Acharya, being compassionate, assisting him in his mission of extending compassion to others, we can be a little discriminating. The best way to exhibit that compassion according to different situations. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that they didn't consider who was fit or unfit candidate for receiving the holy name. So that's like when we publicly chant the holy name. We can publicly chant the holy name and everyone can benefit. Then we're discriminating as to what we say and how we, the message that we deliver to persons according to their situation to help them come another step toward Krishna. And sometimes Prabhupada was, he went the whole way right away. Remember one reading a description where Prabhupada was in, he talked about, he was at a program in Sweden, and it was a hall, the hall was packed, and at the end one young man came to see Prabhupada and said, you know, in a nice manner, respectful manner, said, Swamiji, I liked your talk, I am Christian. And then Prabhupada said, I right away told him, you are not. And he was very surprised. Swamiji, I'm a Christian. He said, do you believe in the Bible? Yes, of course, if I'm Christian, I believe in the Bible. Does the Bible tell you, thou shalt not kill? Yes, the Bible says thou shalt not kill. And are you killing? Oh, no, I don't kill. Some question, I don't remember the wording, but are you eating meat? Oh, yes, I'm eating meat. Then I say you're not Christian. And elaborated. And the young man was shocked. Prabhupada said, I never met him before. And I spoke like this. But we can't do like that. We can't imitate. We should not imitate. But so Prabhupada knew, prompting from Supersoul, in this situation speak this, in that situation speak that. He wasn't always of one kind of a message deliverer. Discriminating how we speak. And another nice example is Chitraketu. When Angira met Chitraketu, he realized he can't receive transcendental knowledge. He's too attached. So he didn't give transcendental knowledge. He gave him a means where he could get detached enough to receive transcendental knowledge. Point being, here's Jad Bharat. He's not speaking to so many people, and he's very clearly speaking to the king. And powerful message. And the king is receiving it well, because he's a qualified receiver. So, just making the point, we should also be discriminating in the exhibition of how we deliver the message of Krishna consciousness that we have received to others, we should be discriminating how to do that. There's some activities that are universal for everybody. Prasadam is universal for everybody. And the holy name is universal for everybody. And then the teachings thoughtfully need to be presented according to the qualification of the person to hear it. But he's spending this whole section on the metaphor is a forest of material existence. These pronouns, idam, he keeps referring to the place, the path in the forest of material existence. It may be a path in the forest, but it's a forest. Whether you can go off the path or stay on the path, you know, like what lots of people tread on, the path of trying to be an enjoyer. But it's a fool's position. Delivering the message to a person that they're a fool is, you have to be careful. Depending on the person, how to present that message. But it's an act of kindness when it's delivered and delivered in a proper manner. Okay, I'll end with that. See if there's discussion. Yes.
From the topic of without sadhu sangha, then it's practically impossible to withstand the force of material nature. That point came up in the discussion. I was wondering about this is the scenario. A devotee has made obligations to a certain community of devotees or to a certain situation, but somehow other he or she may not be finding that sangha to be inspiring or uplifting or like-minded, etc., one of the above. So they feel bound by their obligation, which they've made previously, and so they're going on. At the same time, because they're not able to jive, if you will, with the sangha somehow or other, then the force of material nature is also pushing them internally away, and then suddenly they're gone. So what is a devotee to do in such a dilemma?
Well, this is a different question than the last morning class that we had, but it's a similar answer. But I'll answer it differently, but it's the same answer. Prabhupada, we have a founder acharya, and we were receiving from him, and so we're rightfully indebted to him, grateful and indebted to him. So what was his vision? His vision was a worldwide society, and for good reasons, because people move around a lot, and so should it be that we just like put that vision on hold and bring all the sadhus together and people around the sadhus and just have, you know, don't have that worldwide? I don't think we should do that. At the same time, then, as the garden is growing or devotees are coming forward and wishing sadhu sangha, how can we, you know, institutionally or organizationally or fulfill the vision of our founder acharya to provide that sangha for persons who are eager for that sangha and, you know, following the instructions of the scripture and feel it there are arrangements for that within, you know, some arrangements that Prabhupada made specifically. Devotees come together annually for the, and then go back to your Prabhudatta Desh and, you know, continue the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, where it's not necessarily where there's multiple sadhus that are my favorite sadhus who are present in those locations, but I'm carrying out the instructions of our founder Acharya to do like that. That's one, and that's still there. And then there are other gatherings where persons can come together, get that association, and then disperse and go back to their Prabhudatta Desh. Lord Chaitanya operated like that. Now, one can say, well, every one of them were sadhus, so they had their own, they had themselves. But he did that, Lord Chaitanya did that by example. Lord Nityananda and some of his associates don't come here and just go everywhere. So it's a little bit, a little softer response is different individuals have different natures, and different natures make for different needs and wants, and certainly that has to be considered. It's not, Prabhupada certainly did like that too. Through technology, through proper use of technology, Prabhupada made his association available abundantly, largely through his recorded lectures. And we have his association abundantly in videos and memories and books and publications to make that kind of primary sadhu sangha connection. And it's one, a member of ISKCON needs to understand that's primary, while there may be other sadhu sangha opportunities that in one's life should be primary. And now go back to, we're all individual, and individuals have different requirements. But so my individuality with my different requirements, it comes back to your question the other day. How do we create a balance between, expectations and, of the institution of this worldwide international society for Krishna consciousness that is extending to every town and village? I mean, how are you going to do that, every town and village, if you don't have people going away from whatever is sadhu sangha and going forward and creating? And as you go forward and create, you just go and visit someplace, and then what's going to happen? Unless there's continued association. So it's using the phrase that you used the other day, balance. And, on an individual case, where that balance goes needs to be looked at very carefully. But as I said the other day, the intelligence of where that balance line should be will come if there is very strong attachment to our founder Acharya, and then, my own subjectivity can reach a point of clarity instead of subjectivity, like descending understanding of what my place is in this international mixture of the mission of our founder Acharya and me as an individual, or each of us as individuals, and similarly how to guide others who are each individuals with their different nature and their different needs and wants because of that different nature, and respecting the differences while at the same time unity in diversity. So my answer, in short, in summary, is become attached to understanding our founder Acharya and his wish for us and his wish for me, and connect with that strongly, and the answer to your question will be found. And otherwise, if that, even it could be spoken, here's where it is. If I'm not in that position of attachment and fidelity with our founder Acharya, it's going to bounce. You know, well, yeah, but... And that's now, and it will become increasingly, as the Hare Krishna movement, as time goes by, and the years from when Prabhupada was present and accessing his physical presence gets more distant, and you know, the chanting of Hare Krishna and the membership, the numbers of devotees expands and the diversity expands, without that principle is going to become increasingly more important, as it is important today, as it was important when Prabhupada was present. And accessing that association, something, this is just an observation or personal realization maybe. During Prabhupada's presence, he had a potency to pick people up from the gutter and bring them to a very elevated position. And some persons were completely attached and literally dependent upon that physical personal association demonstrated by, and I thought like that a little bit, but I saw it happen when he left. So many other persons left because they were dependent upon Vapu and not upon Vani. There, to me, there's a clue in answer to how to develop, you know, that attachment. It's something that, as one who's training new devotees or working with people, encouraging them, helping them, showing by example how to become, you know, attached and, you know, connected to our founder Acharya. That's in a very important part of your service and our service. And when as that connection is stronger, then my individuality and the expression of it, which was our topic the other day, and similar to this morning, and others and their expressions of their individuality, not like it has to match mine or it has to match, you know, the universal cookie cutter form. It's, you know, diversity, individuality with unity. And where that goes, it's dependent upon the clarity of that and resonance of that and feeling satisfaction in that is dependent upon the strength of connection with our founder Acharya. And with that, there's so many other, like, from the hub come spokes. Those persons who particularly inspire us, that sadhu-like quality in them is connected to our founder Acharya. It's very practical. Yes.
Maharaj, you were mentioning sacrifices, how Prabhupada made a lot of sacrifices to come to the West and help us.
Yes.
I was wondering, on a personal level, what sacrifice can we as aspiring devotees make to inspire our superiors that the training and advice they're giving us is having an effect and is working?
Well, that's a nice question. Very nice question. We'll speak first, just like from Bhagavad Gita, as you know, familiar about with Bhagavad Gita. Krishna speaks a lot about sacrifice. And one application is the sacrifice of the brahmachari, the sacrifice of the grihastha, the sacrifice of the vanaprastha. So ashram specific, there are different sacrifices. For brahmachari, the sacrifice of the hearing process. So we can assist our spiritual master, our founder acharya, by as brahmacharis, sacrifice of the hearing process, get absorbed and hear the message, and following that, as I described, comes then the welling of a sense of wow, of gratitude, and then wishing to give that to others. So the brahmachari goes to preach. The brahmachari serves as the menial servant of the spiritual master and goes forth begging alms. And it's not like, you know, because they're beggars, but actually they're on behalf of the spiritual master. They're giving the opportunity for others to engage in devotional service. In the classic sense, the student goes and accepts alms for the spiritual master, his teacher, and gives the alms to his teacher as part of the training of detachment and humility, the humble position, and whatever I receive, it's not mine. I mean, I've heard this I don't know how many times when Prabhupada describes, he said it again and again, that brahmachari training, he accepts alms and brings back to the spiritual master, and he never considers it to be his, and he would say specifically, again and again, because it's in the Bhagavatam, and if the spiritual master neglects to call him for his meal, he'll fast. Meaning, there's no proprietorship, there's no like, I'm doing this because I'm going to get something. My position is the humble servant of the spiritual master. So we're going back to the discussion of the other day, I'm sacrificing my false ego and my sense of being an independent, an enjoyer of the fruits of my activity. I'm sacrificing that. And to where does the fruit of my activity go? It goes to my spiritual master. And he can do with me what he likes. And it trains one. Anyway. It trains one. If one becomes a householder, same thing happens in household life. And if one stays a brahmachari, I'm happy being in that position as the humble, menial servant of my spiritual master. I'm happy being in that position. So the sacrifice, one can say then, of my independent enjoyment mood. So rather is the mood that's cultivated is, the sacrifice results in the mood of the happiness of, for the pleasure of my teacher, my master, my guide, the one who's guiding me and taking me to Krishna. I'm so indebted, I'll do anything for them. And then it's not subjugation of, you know, me, it's dedication of me to, it's love. And on the other side, there's a loving person who recognizes one's needs and will see to one's needs. Krishna says like that, yoga kshema vaham yaham. He'll see to our needs. We don't have to worry about it. He'll see to our needs. So, in response to your question, I gave emphasis to the hearing process. One can say, then, the sacrifice of assisting the spiritual master in his mission, our founder Acharya's mission. But the founder Acharya's mission is not just it certainly is going out, but it's not just going out and meeting the conditioned souls and bringing them to Krishna. We don't have the capacity to do that without the proper hearing, the sacrifice of hearing. So the sacrifice of some of our time and direct energy to extend that same message to others, that which we have received, we give it to others in a way that we're suited for. Sacrifice acting on our false ego platform and ultimately eager to receive the disclosure of our true identity, starting with we're not this body or spirit soul, and continuing. All of that will be disclosed by that sacrifice of acting on the platform of false ego. By the grace of Guru and Krishna, it will be disclosed. Something else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I have a question. I don't know if I will be able to properly explain that.
Speak slowly and clearly, please. I don't repeat what you said, but the rest of it slowly and clearly.
There are people in abundance with...
There are people where?
There are more people with dormant consciousness.
There are more people...
Dormant consciousness.
With limited consciousness.
Limited consciousness.
And then there are advanced devotees with elevated consciousness.
Elevated what?
Consciousness.
Consciousness.
And it is prescribed like people with limited consciousness should seek Sangha, Sadhu Sangha. But when we take example of Jad Bharata, he was born in the lineage of Rishabhdev.
He was born in a...
He was born in a family of Rishabhdev.
Well, that was when he was Bharat Maharaj.
Yeah.
When he was Jad Bharat, he wasn't born in the lineage of Rishabhdev.
But in a way, he was his first spiritual... He was his spiritual master.
Who was?
Rishabhdev.
Okay.
And then throughout, he was born self-realized as Jad Bharata. But he never, nobody was able to seek his association.
So what's your point?
The point is the protection of consciousness was the reason, or how I can understand that?
I couldn't understand the question. Well, he made a decision. He says it. I made a boo-boo and I wasn't going to do it again. That's what he said. So I kept myself apart from the worldly people. He made that decision. He said it in these verses. So let's turn it, flip it over and say, when we engage in preaching work, Prabhupada certainly taught us this, we should understand we're taking risk. We shouldn't be foolish and think otherwise. We're taking risk. But flip it back the other way. Don't engage in preaching work and you're taking a risk. Just, you know, stay in your bhajan kutir and do bhajan. Don't go and preach. That has its risk too. In fact, Bhaktisiddhanta said, don't do that. Go and preach. So, the world is a risky place. Do or don't do, it's a risky place. So he was taking a certain path because he gives the reason why. We're not recommended to do what he did, become avadutas and, you know, just be silent and That's, you know, that's not what's recommended for us. But he did that for, you know, the reasons he stated. Does that address your question? Okay. Last question. We'll end.
Thank you, Maharaj.
On the point of compassion, how does compassion and detachment balance? Sometimes
balancing it,
compassion can lead
detachment.
To entanglement.
Okay. I call it detached caring. Detached caring. The tendency is, oh, I care for you. And then, you know, you own the situation. And then you care for somebody else and you own that situation and your head's spinning. And you get crushed. You know, I'm carrying the weight of so many people's problems, I'm crushed. So then stop caring. No, that's not it. It's not exactly a balance, it's transcendence, transcendental caring. Because detachment sounds like I don't care, and caring sounds like I care. But those are material ideas of caring and detachment. Detachment is attachment to Krishna. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5. What is called renunciation is the same as yoga, making oneself with the Supreme. Real detachment is attachment to Krishna. So when you extend caring on behalf of Krishna, who cares better than and more than we can possibly care, we're his instrument. And it's he's the decider, not me, of the destiny of this individual. So we honor the destiny of the individual in Krishna's care. But as Krishna's instrument, we extend care. And we feel care. And we also, there's detachment in that it's up to Krishna. So those are transcendental emotions that, you know, it requires some purified state of consciousness to have anything transcendental, including a transcendental emotion. It's a big subject, but there's a small response to a big subject. I'm going to end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.